The tape recorder is on again.
Constantly broadcasting.
Latest technology. Wow, shocking. So no matter where you are, you know.
It's impressive reading about this.
I just hope it's a good way. I don't know.
Well, they've been offering so much about homeland security.
Well, the issue, of course, is tracking people who don't want to be tracked.
Right.
Federal, the U.S. Supreme Court has rendered a ruling that that can't be done without a warrant.
Oh, okay, that's for sure.
They used, yeah.
Okay. I'm glad to know that.
I'm Nancy.
Nancy, nice to meet you. I don't know.
Hi, good to see you, Nancy. John LeBrackus.
Yes.
Hello.
Oh, sorry, Aaron Graham.
Yeah, Aaron.
Hi, Jamie Hurd.
Yeah, good to see you, Jamie.
Hi.
Very nice to meet you.
Aaron.
Hello.
Hi, my name's Aaron.
Aaron.
Yeah, nice to meet you. I'm Jamie.
Margaret Daly.
Margaret Daly, nice to meet you.
I'm coming down. Jamie Hurd.
Good. Good to have you in Newport again.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So Jamie, you realize I get involved in lots of different
things. I know, you're kind of,
Business Man of the Year.
Did you get that?
In 2011, yeah.
2011, it's good.
So congratulations.
Thanks.
On the tradition.
Let us begin first by, we're now having the grant proposal with OMSI. Would you first identify yourselves or the record, please?
Sure. My name is Jamie Hurd. I'm Vice President of Programs at OMSI.
Nancy Stuber, President of OMSI.
Aaron Graham, Vice President of Development at OMSI.
We would like you to start with making a presentation, and we'll go into questions as you go along.
Terrific. Well, I'll start out, and Jamie is responsible for our program area, and Aaron for our development and fundraising. So I'll start out with framing the project overall and then let them add to, and certainly all of us will respond to questions. I really appreciate that you've invited us to come and talk with you. Thank you. And we're very excited about the opportunity to be part of the Newport community, particularly the science education community. OMSI has been operating outdoor science camps for more than 60 years, and the residential locations, we have been operating them at the on the Oregon coast and in Northern California and in the San Juan Islands for 50 years. But we've been doing those always in leased facilities. And as our board worked with us to do a business study of the residential camps business, we realized that we're further ahead when we own a facility. We own one in the high desert in Central Oregon near Fossil that we've operated for 60 years, Hancock Field Station. And we know that model, and we also know the leased model. What was happening at the coast is the camps we were leasing were wonderful locations, but we didn't control all the use. So the owners of those camps were using them during the summer or at certain times of year when we couldn't use them for our purposes. And that also meant that our staff were having to move out every weekend because there'd be weekend use. And so our staff counselors would go and stay in a hotel or sleep on someone's floor until the program started again on Monday. And that wasn't so good for retaining the best staff. So all of those things led us to say we can really grow this program on the coast if we own a facility. And we started to look up and down the coast properties. We looked at a number of properties, and you all, I think, know John Gray. John was involved with us because he's been such a longtime supporter of outdoor science education, including at OMSI, and certainly knows property development. So he looked at several sites with us. And then the property that was here, offered by Investors 12 at South Beach, became available. And as we walked the site with John and with our board members, we realized what a unique location this is. So it has all the elements that we prize for outdoor science education. It has natural environment with South Beach State Park right there. It has the dunes and the dune ecology. Kids can access the ocean without ever crossing 101 because it's on the west side. Mm-hmm. The Safe Haven Hill is there, so the tsunami evacuation. but most significantly, the science education community that's already here. And as we started to learn more about that and learn about the economic development vision that you all have put together, it was very impressive. We got very excited about how we could add to this strategy of ocean observing and ocean literacy. So we don't operate a camp currently in such an urban setting, but we think that what this location could provide is so exciting, so rich for students, both in terms of helping them understand the natural environment, but to think about the ways that they could get jobs in this environment, whether it's in research, whether it's in support industries for ocean observing, and then the idea of the engineering and the technology and all of those support industries that support those kinds of endeavors. So we got very excited about it. We were fortunate that Investors 12 gave us a discounted price for the non-commercial zoned portion of the property, and that John Gray contributed the dollars to allow us to buy the property. I think you're pretty familiar with that and its location. Our job now is to raise the dollars to build a camp. And we have done some work to research how quickly and how quickly we can raise money and how much money we can raise. We are currently targeting a $10 million project that includes the land value. We have recently completed a planning study to look at the fundraising side and how quickly we can raise the dollars and where we can raise them. And Aaron is heading up a strategy to do that. We, in this model, hope that we will be operating a camp in the summer of 2016. But if you work backwards from that, that sounds like a long way off. But when you work backwards from it, you realize that we would need at least a year of construction and preparation to operate the camp. That leaves us about 2 years to complete the fundraising for the project. And I think that the proposal that we have in front of you is really significant to that, because if you believe that this is a wise investment in helping to stimulate this project and all that it can do for the community, then that's very significant as we go out and raise funds. Because the fact that you're giving us a matching challenge, you would be giving us a matching challenge, is really good. We use that to leverage other support. Mm-hmm. It's also a real endorsement from the community that you see value in this. I guess I would say I served on the Convention and Travel Bureau for Portland and chaired that board for a couple of years. So I fully understand the importance of leveraging dollars for particularly a tourism grant to bring people here and to stimulate the local economy. And I believe this project can really do that. So we'll be happy to answer questions about how or expand on things that we put into the proposal.
So OMSI is tied to science. Our group is tourism. But it sounds like what, you know, reading the proposal, you're open to having people come that maybe, I mean, one model is it's just a bunch of kids coming. They come on a bus, they drive up, and they all unload, they stay at your facility, and they hop in the bus and they drive away. I mean, they experience the area, but they're not tourists in a standard sense of families. But I saw in here some discussion of families coming and staying. So is the model changing a bit where you're also including families as tourists? And could you talk through some of that so you could understand?
Sure. I'll let Jamie talk a little bit about the way that we engage families currently and then what we would envision here, because I think the location of this camp does allow us to even expand uses over what we've been doing in our other camps.
So we currently, at our other locations, so we do own a facility in the John Day Fossil Beds called the Hancock Field Station, and our current model includes three family weekends throughout the course of the season from Memorial Day to Labor Day. We would hope to replicate that here and maybe even expand on that with some family camps, maybe even in the wintertime for whale watching or for storm watching,
Likewise, we feel because we are so close to an urban center that we have a lot more opportunities to offer the facility for retreats for scientists or maybe from groups coming in from out of the area to use the facility on kind of non-camp times and weekends, which is a model that a number of residential campsites do use. So we think that we're very much able to expand on that kind of basis of, we have that base of kids coming, but I think that we can expand on that because of the location of Newport and being so close to so many other educational facilities and tourist interests.
So would it be like a hotel? People check in?
I
or
think
would it be just a day facility and people would stay in the community at hotels?
I think it would actually be where people would come and rent the facility for the weekend or the week. So it'd be more like a retreat. So perhaps a group might come out, a business group might come out, or scientists, if they're coming out for research, might want to book the facility. So it would not necessarily be like a hotel, but maybe for family retreats or corporate retreats, they would book the entire facility at one time.
Okay.
I'd add to that, though, that I think there is spillover effect that would help the local hotel industry, for instance. So as an example, we just hosted the OMSI board retreat here, and we brought 30 people to spend a couple of days in the community, and what we found is a lot of those people spent the night. We used three hotels. We used local catering, and a lot of those people decided to stay over and make it a weekend. And we envision a lot of that families could now come and then extend their stay here or have their kids at camp for a particular program, and then it's a great opportunity to have the other members of the family in town as well. So we think there's opportunity to do both.
Thanks. Have you identified, or maybe it's too early in the game, a potential executive that would be located in Newport to run this facility?
So Will, our format currently for running residential sites is we'll have a camps manager and they oversee the facility, and then there would be an assistant manager, a cook, and a maintenance person. So we have camps managers that are currently running our other sites, but whether or not that would be the same person, I think time would tell when we get to 2016.
But there would be staff that live here,
right,
that run the site. So those, at least those four, and then seasonally there would be the teaching staff and the counselors, and that would fluctuate, and perhaps they would move to different camps. But there would be staff on site here year-round.
And we would anticipate that for things like event rentals, we would be hiring local to manage those events, because that's a much different thing than working at an outdoor education facility.
Right.
So we would kind of need to have two teams of people available from the local community.
Where have you previously had your marine science programs?
We have programming that takes place up at Quanalong and near Fort Stevens. And we do outdoor science school there in the spring and in the fall, and about 3 weeks of summer programming, mostly because they use the facility the rest of the summer. We also have 9 weeks of summer programming in the San Juans, and we go up and put up kind of a temporary camp with wall tents, and they've been very gracious in letting us stay there. So those are the two places primarily, and then we do some coastal ecology and tide pools down in the Redwood Forest for about 3 weeks during the summer, and that's in Northern California.
And for many years, we used Camp Magruder on the North Coast, operated by the Methodist Church. And then in addition, there are programs that travel up and down the coast currently from those base sites, and they might come to Newport, camp here, stay at South Beach, do programs here, and we expect to continue those starting next summer, this coming year. So those are ongoing programs at the coast.
Our summer programming does include, we currently have kids coming to South Beach almost every week, as well as spending the night in the aquarium as part of our both our residential camps program and our summer day classes program. So we bring kids out to Newport on a very regular basis throughout the summer.
So can you talk a little bit about like the partnerships that you formed or are forming with Aquarium and Hatfield mm-hmm. and all that? Have you already been in conversations? How's that going? And
so we have been in conversations with very many people. We actually just met with the Aquarium yesterday, and that's maybe after a number of meetings. That wasn't our first meeting. I met with Ruth McDonald from Lincoln County Schools on Friday, and Sarah Scamser from Fisherman's Wives Club, and we've been working a lot with Hatfield Marine Sciences, working with Tracy Cruz and Sean Rowe. And so, and then as well as like Tim Fisher at Yaquina Head Lighthouse and J.R. Collier from South Beach State Park. So we're in conversations with a lot of people and really trying to understand how it's such a collaborative community. It's really mm-hmm. quite impressive. And I know that there's a lot of conversation amongst those partners in terms of how they complement each other from a programming point of view, how they complement each other from a resource point of view, you know, both natural resource, financial resource, and then educational resource. And so we've been entering into those conversations, and we're fortunate that we have some time to really understand what those concerns are and what those issues are. And that's really my primary work for the year, is to get involved in those conversations so that I can understand where the concerns are and how people are operating. And for example, I know that Lincoln County Schools and Hatfield and the Aquarium meet on like a quarterly basis, and so I'm hoping to join those conversations mostly as a listener and a participant, because they're the ones that are currently programming together. So yes, we are in conversations with quite a few people, and we do hope to develop and finalize some memorandums of understanding, but we're not quite there yet. We're just in the early stages of conversation.
Because mm-hmm. I was going to ask if you had any letters of support from any of them, but it sounds like that'll come perhaps after you get the MOUs.
Yeah, I think that we're getting close with some of the organizations, and then you know, we'll keep keep in discussion, so mm-hmm. yes.
Okay. To add to that, I think a really important piece for us too is to be cognizant of the funding environment here mm-hmm. in Newport. And so, you know, our discussion with the Aquarium yesterday was really productive in that way, and to talk about how we can coordinate our efforts and partner and think about ways that we could mm-hmm. increase access for the local schools and students and families. Mm-hmm. So we are entering into this with a very collaborative mindset and wanting to be cognizant of that and respectful of what's going on here. And we think that there are models that we can put together and ways we can do that that benefit the organizations that are already here, as well as helping us to fundraise to complete this project.
Mm-hmm. So you're meeting with Carrie Lewis, Carrie Morgan. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday we met with Carrie Lewis and Carol, the new development director who's mm-hmm. been on the job about 2 months. Okay. And it was really for coordinating fundraising efforts. Mm-hmm. So it was things like, you know, from a donor point of view, donors care about the impact that we have. They care about kids and outdoors and marine science education. And it's my belief that we tell a better story if we tell it together mm-hmm. than if we ask donors to pick and choose between us. We're all doing the same work and toward the same ends. Now, practically speaking, there are some donors that have really deep allegiance to the aquarium and some really deep allegiance to OMSI. How do we share those mm-hmm. so that we can, by working together, kind of benefit both organizations and at the same time be really transparent with each other about who we're approaching so we're not getting in each other's way? Mm-hmm. And I think there was a real spirit of that. We offered to share donor lists on who the people are that are most passionate about outdoor education and marine science. And so that's an example of how nonprofits collaborate. Mm-hmm. And it's not new to us. You know, we're in a fundraising environment in Portland where there are many nonprofits really telling good stories to the same donors. Mm-hmm. And we have figured out ways that we collaborate on that so that we're not confusing donors and that we're telling a good story. And I think we can do that here as well.
It's a strong story, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I can get clear in my mind, are the camps year-round or just mainly in the summer? Do you do them mainly in the summer?
No, well, they're most of the year. We run outdoor science school in the spring and the fall. And we currently do that at three locations. We have a site in John Day, we have a site in Corbett and on the side of Mount Hood, and then at the coast. And then we also run summer programming. So we don't have that much downtime, but we do have different audiences depending on the time of the year.
So here you'd be the outdoor school and a summer program.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. But we also think that there's a real opportunity to expand that time, just as Jamie was saying. You know, at Hancock Field Station, it's under snow and really icy, windy roads to get there. So we really don't do programming in January there. But here, we don't have an issue of whether people can make it to the site. So it's an opportunity, I think, to look at where could we expand our programming. And maybe it's not our traditional school audience, because schools in December are probably not going to do field trips to outdoor school, but it might be a time when we could do elder hostels, or we could partner with the Marine Science Center on something they have going on and do some complementary programming or provide some housing for scientists or families who might be coming in. So I'm convinced, in fact, our business model says we want to expand the numbers of months that we're using the program, the site.
Right.
Which that would help Newport greatly, because probably as you saw today, January is pretty dead around here. So,
when I can give you an example, so even at Hancock, which is very remote, you know, we have over the years developed relationships with different associations. So we have a week where the Rock Hounds come out, and they hold their retreat there, and we have a very close relationship with them, and they've actually helped us establish and maintain a lapidary shop. So they come out and they make their cabochons, and they go out to Richardson's Ranch and get thunder eggs, and so that's every year they come out. We also have a week where the Rose City Astronomers come out and spend the week at the camp, and so in that, again, being a very remote location, those are some long-standing relationships. We anticipate that with all of the scientific research and science education that's taking place in this region, that we would also develop relationships such as those, and we would see groups similar to that using the facility in off times or year round.
With regard to the partner housing rental aspect of April through October, hosting interns from Hatfield and OSU, are those interns that are already coming here, or is this a new segment that has the opportunity to come here when this is built?
I think probably a little bit of both. I know OSU is looking to expand and have more interns on site, and in our conversations with Hatfield, you know, one of the things we ask partners or potential partners is what would be useful to you in this facility, and that was one of the things that came out loud and clear was some opportunities for interns to stay there. And you know, I think when we're thinking about this, and part of the reason we want to learn so much about this community is because we weren't thinking about that, but then when we heard about this need, we thought, well, wouldn't that be great to maybe do some exchange and actually give these interns opportunities to teach or be involved with the campers during the summer, and what a great opportunity for the kids who would be coming to the camp.
I see you've kind of got it mapped, but is there any kind of conceptual drawing about what the actual lodging part would look like?
I can, not ready for prime time, but I can share with you some really early concept of that. And the reason I say that we didn't include it in your packet because it's formative. Oh, you have it there. Okay.
Right.
So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the idea is that these would be, so here's the new street, which is not here yet, right? So that's Abalone. And that we would have a dining facility, a teaching facility that would include some classrooms and lab spaces. Sorry, can I hold your
phone? Yeah, sure, please.
Sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
So if we look at it this way, the ocean's up here.
Wait, where's the ocean?
Up here.
Wait, I don't see a north on this map. Can you?
It's north would be to the right.
North would be this way.
Be this one.
I mean, on the map, it'll be easier to see.
Yeah, I'll give John back his thing. So this big arrow looks to the ocean.
Okay, that's
usually
west.
The big open arrow points north, but it doesn't point north.
And then 101 is how the entry goes? Is that where your main entry goes, right into 101 there?
It doesn't. So that's a street that doesn't exist. So this would be Abalone Street, and it comes up into 30th, right? And then 30th goes out to 101, and 30th is not quite there yet either. All
30th Street? What's adjacent to 30th?
Is that the one off of... not Rogue, but far. Yeah.
Not too far from Rogue. So it's right next to the point of entry, comes in right by the Tsunami Hill there.
Tsunami Hill.
Tsunami Evacuation Hill? Is that what we call it? Safe Haven. Safe Haven. Sorry.
So the 101 is right here, and it's parallel.
Okay,
so
parallel
this is
to future abalone?
Yes,
oh, okay.
Future abalone.
Right,
so it's right here. And in fact, this shows where the road would come in off of 101.
I see.
And the entrance. This parcel between the, if you hold that back so everyone can see, from here to 101 is still bare land, and it's zoned commercial, so because it fronts on 101. This whole parcel was owned by Investors 12, and we just bought this 20 acres that is not zoned commercial.
And where is that in relation to Toby Murray, the big auto place by the light?
They're down here.
They're south of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's a road behind it, I believe.
Okay.
We're kind of behind them. I think that they're kind of in here somewhere.
Yeah, they're on 101,
yeah,
but they're right
around here.
So you're right
and
the
this is the Coho Branch neighborhood.
Yeah, Coho Branch.
We're just
right
at the base of the bridge. So the bridge comes down and lands here, and the Safe Haven Hill is right here. So it's right at the south end of the bridge.
Right. And this is all South Beach State Park that kind of wraps around the south and the west end of the property. Oh, yes.
This might be a better map that shows you.
That is a lot better. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's
there
what I was looking go. For yeah. for all of them. Wow, okay. Nice piece of property.
It is. It's lovely. The dunes are really fantastic adjacent to that.
Cool.
And it's really nice that it's set back a little bit too. I think that in terms of like having people there over the course of a week, it's got a little bit of protection, but then direct access to all that dune ecology. So pretty wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
There's two wetland areas there.
I was noticing.
And they're beautiful. They're remnant coastal wetland natural areas. And we envision using those as teaching spaces as well as the dunes. A lot of this is Scotch broom, so we'd be working to remove those non-native species and plant with native species and do some restoration of the site.
So in terms of the site plan, you have kind of a black and white version. These represent what we're thinking about in terms of kind of a dormitory housing. So we want to have some modularity up here. Right now we're looking at rooms that would maybe house 8 to 12 people in any one room with bathrooms, so that when we do have off-season times, we have the ability to rent it to a more variety of groups. And then we would have a teaching space that would include a large gathering classroom and some labs, and then a dining hall space, and then potentially some staff housing. So that's all being worked out right now.
How many units were you going to put in for the student lodging?
Well, I would say that we, some of that is still being talked about, but I would say it would be between 150 and 200 beds. So when we have outdoor school, a lot of times we have about 120 students plus chaperones, and so that seems to be a good number. We currently, like at Hancock, we currently have about 120 beds, and we tend to have about 80 to 90 students at camp any given week. You don't get full capacity because there's always kind of a gender and age breakdown, and so you have to have some room to put people in the appropriate configurations, logic configurations.
What's going to be the capacity of the parking lot?
In terms of cars? I couldn't tell you the number of cars. It's primarily designed for buses and vans, knowing that the majority of the kind of large groups that would be coming in buses and vans.
Well, you said you're going to be doing event rentals part of the year, too, so what's the plan for that, then, for parking?
There's this parking lot in the back, I don't have a good answer for you right now, so...
We're still in, as you can see, this is all very conceptual design. And the next phase will go into real design development and work out some of those details. So there's still an opportunity to determine what size of lot that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really, like this year, we'll be doing a lot of the design development. So this kind of helped us with some early thinking to see what could be possible. And help us understand like where we might have to make some choices and where you know we could put our priorities. So, but the actual kind of real design work is going to be begun this year.
Any other questions?
We all owe a big thank you to John Gray, don't we?
Certainly do. We think about that every time we talk about this project, and for many years he's really supported the accessibility of our programs to make sure that students could have outdoor experiences regardless of what they could afford. So he's made a real impact, not only on our program, but on so many.
And I think on that note with accessibility, I mean, we currently do fundraise about $220,000 a year for students in various programs. That includes the outdoor education, but that's, you know, across the programs in OMSI. And we are being very intentional about planning additional dollars in our fundraising campaigns so that we can maintain additional fundraising or additional financial aid for the Newport camp.
What's the annual budget of the overall OMSI?
About $18 million, 18 to 20.
And it doesn't run in the red.
That's right. We have to operate in the black, and in fact, we have to generate enough surplus dollars to, you know, do all the other things that we would do, like financing debt or providing anything extra that we do. So we've been fortunate to be able to do that. We don't receive any government dollars for operations, so we don't get anything from the state or the city. So we're an independent 501c3, and we have about 80% of that is earned income. So it comes through everything from ticket sales to theaters to food and beverage to our exhibits. We build exhibits and we tour those around the North America and a little bit in Europe, and those all provide a revenue stream to us. Our after-hours rentals in the museum, all those different sources of funds, and then contributed 15 to 20% that comes from everything from grants. We bring in a couple million dollars a year in federal grants on average. And then contributions from businesses and individuals. So it's not an easy road to do it that way, because we have a mission that says we're going to be affordable and accessible. And so we're really committed to that. We don't charge as much as it would cost to run the operations, and that's why we have the contributed income, and it's so important to us.
And you did mention in your packet that there are like scholarships available at certain campuses.
That's right. So we have a whole variety of ways that we make sure people have access. But for the camps program, we provide scholarships or reduced fees for schools, and we raise money in order to be able to offer those. So we cover those costs through individual contributions or foundation grants.
I seem to remember when we talked before, you had mentioned something about special accommodations for Lincoln County students, but I didn't know if that was, that wasn't mentioned in here. Is that a plan, or,
do and I don't mean any. Yeah, part of our fundraising planning currently is to have a $1 million reserve fund that would go toward maintaining the camp, but also providing scholarships for students in schools within the Lincoln County area.
Oh, okay.
So we would be expanding our financial aid program for this camp in this area in particular.
Okay.
As John mentioned before, this is like tourism related grant. I know you can go to your museum and everything in Portland, but this is different as being a camp. Have you thought of trying to tie something in where people could pay to go daily to see, you know what I mean? So it's more tourist related, to, and it would also bring in income?
To the camp?
Mm-hmm.
Open to all those ideas. We're just putting together the program plan now and in partnership. So as an example, in thinking about the aquarium and where we might partner, they have some day camp programs that they run maybe 2 days a week. They don't have any residential facility. So they're attracting people in and coming in to just as visitors, but then also kids that could come to those day camp programs. We've talked about what if we offered some programs together that were week-long, that provided some residential component to it, and maybe we have a few days of program and they have a few days of program. And out of that, could we, because of our relationships in Portland and our membership, start to promote those kind of programs so that more people would think about coming to the coast, mm-hmm. and not only for their kids, but how they could, the whole family could participate. Mm-hmm. We currently have, OMSI has a membership of about 20,000 households. We know how to communicate with them. We have a really strong brand with them. They've bought memberships because they value what we do. We should be able to leverage that. We should be able to do promotions to those people for the programs that we'd be doing here, and we would. So we currently send them information and catalogs. We do partnerships around our membership with other organizations, so I think there's real opportunity to do that. But we haven't defined anything specifically yet.
Okay.
The city's got, for this activity, $300,000. We've been approached by a couple of other organizations. Your request is for the total amount. Is what would the impact be to you if we were to allocate less than that? Would it severely hamper you, or how would that affect your ability to move forward, I guess?
Well, I think that we would be able to move forward either way.
Yeah.
And be happy to. And certainly the full amount would allow us to leverage more dollars on the front end of this project, and I think speed the pace of fundraising. Part of what we're fundraising for right now is to get the more specific plan, you know, the money for the more specific plan and site development.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working very closely with the city related to the overall site development plan and how we build the new abalone.
Mm-hmm.
Those timelines are actually the city of Newport's timelines for putting in the new streets. And so we could accelerate that if we can accelerate funding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of how we're looking at it. Since the time of this submission, we have already received a $100,000 pledge from a donor to this project. So there's a lot of interest and enthusiasm for it, and I think having the support and the endorsement of the city of Newport in moving this project forward would make a big difference for us.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware that typically these funds aren't available until you have a building permit, so you're actually ready to do something with it?
We were not aware of that. We had talked to Mayor McConnell about the timing of this application. I know we're working on the permitting process right now related to abalone and
mm-hmm.
to all of the site improvements that actually have to be done before we could even get a building permit, is my understanding. So
mm-hmm.
we're at that end of the project now.
Any other questions?
Were you going to speak any more about your capital campaign funding marketing strategy to us?
Sure, I'm happy
okay.
to.
All right.
Do you have any?
Yeah.
So we just completed a campaign planning study with a fundraising consulting group that helped us to do interviews with people who may be major contributors to the project and also could help be campaign leaders. We also spoke to a lot of people who are close to John Gray and see this as an opportunity to carry forth his legacy. So we are putting together the overall strategy now, but we'll be entering into an advancement and early lead gift phase this summer. So we've identified a couple of gifts that we think could come in the $500,000 to $1 million range from individuals who are very passionate about OMSI and very passionate about outdoor education and see the value that this could be for Newport and for the state. We hope that will get us most of the way there, actually, through the major gifts portion of the campaign, and then there will be some opportunity for others to be involved in the project, and that's kind of where we're talking to the aquarium and some others about how could we develop some financial aid programs and things like that, maybe with them, that would help to get the local community involved in this project as well.
Anyone? Do you have anything for you you'd like to say?
I'd like to leave you with this, so this will give you some idea of our programming. These are our teacher education guides, are the, those, and then this is our camps and classes. So basically this is kind of summer and this is school year. But that will give you an idea of the kind of array of programs that we're currently offering and the type of educational opportunities that, that we would be bringing to Newport.
You have an excellent website.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marketing will be glad to hear that.
Yeah. Wikipedia.
Right. I think it's also worth noting that the particularly with the school groups, so both school groups and campers, we do attract an audience from across the state. So we know that we have schools and individuals participating in our programming that live in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, and along the coast. So I think that you know, coming to Newport is a really excellent opportunity to kind of showcase for the rest of the state the type of work that's going on here and the importance of ocean literacy. And so I see that as a really huge opportunity.
I'd just add that around around your question about timing perhaps and permitting, while the actual physical construction is probably 2 years out before we're building facility there, we do anticipate using the site right away. Jamie described programs that will be happening this summer here in South Beach that we want to start looking at the partnership programs that we can do with the partners even before we have a physical facility built. And then to Aaron's point, in terms of accelerating the project, it's about the fundraising and how quickly we can raise the funds. And while your support through this grant would be perhaps earlier in the project than you would typically do, I think it really can help accelerate the project and move us further ahead. We would anticipate using local contractors for construction, involving people locally whenever we have paying jobs, and for the city to be able to move ahead more aggressively on some of the street improvements. That also helps the local jobs, produces local jobs. So we are asking for your consideration perhaps earlier than some projects, but we think that it can help move things along more quickly and leverage the fundraising. And we will move as quickly as we can raise the funds.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are probably going to have another meeting, and we may ask you back, but we don't know if that's for certain, so we'll let you know.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. And if you have any additional questions, of course, please contact us, and we'll be happy to
answer. Do we have a contact number somewhere?
It's only our contact number.
Yeah. Okay.
It's part of the invitation.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah. Have a good trip back. Yeah.
Thank you. Is that off now?
No, it's on. Turn it on. We can take a bit of a break because you're not here for a few minutes.
Tickle on my throat. Let me get some water.